one to me, and they say that it's very good. Okay, they're rolling, right?
It's rolling, recording.
Okay. Gentlemen, it's our first year after Pesach. It's April 7th, 2013, and it's Erev Yom HaShoah that will begin at 8 o'clock tonight. I'll be giving Shia tomorrow as well, and welcome those that honor me with their presence, and I say hello to the many listening across the wide expanse of this world that the Ribbono Shel Olam made for us. I want to dedicate this year. It's been a very difficult weekend for me. A very close friend passed away Friday morning. Someone I know for generations, Rabbi Malin Galinsky, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. And Malin epitomized Torah, his love, his smile, shtickl chassidish, appreciation from YU through to Lakewood. Mizrahi, what we've built here. He governed the Shalavim campus for many years, came in Aliyah to that position, and was very, very matzliach. And my heart goes out. He died very suddenly, so it's very shocking for all of us. My heart goes out to Sonia, who's a Stern College graduate. I'll just want to tell you that Sonia's life was saved by a Protestant family in a suburb of France that hit her, and a neighboring family hit her brother, and a third family hit her sister. They risked their lives, and they're all listed as Chassidei Umat HaOlam. And here we are, Erev Yom HaShoah. Malin's family was in America. His grandfather, his mother's father, was Rav in Denver. Rabbi Halperin was an Adam Gadol, a big Talmud Chacham, came in Aliyah and devoted his final decade or more to building mikvot in Eretz Yisrael. It's just, they don't make them like Malin Galinsky, and Yehi Zichro Baruch, and the Ribbono Shel Olam should give us the strength to go further and do good things and let it be in his memory. I want to make one small correction. I thank Chaim Schnitzer. I mentioned Yeshiva Shari Torah in Kew Gardens, in Kew Gardens Hills. It's in Kew Gardens. It's in Queens, but I had the neighborhood wrong, so I want to correct myself. Now, I got a lot of fascinating comments on the last few Shayurim, and I'm going to work the comments into today's Shia, as you will see. Why the Shulchan Aruch? Eli, come closer. Don't say this. We're so few today. Why the Shulchan Aruch? So I gave three tremendous reasons, and I don't know whether they're all right or they complement, they supplement each other, but certainly what I had to say, and I'm, again, I don't want to take credit that I made these reasons up. You'll find them in all sophisticated volumes that deal with the Shulchan Aruch and why it's so fundamental to our learning and getting smicha and paskining as shaila. Why? Oh, I'm sorry, I made you move and you had the computer. Okay, set it up. So I want to tell you, a Hasidish younger man who's been listening to the Shurim evidently for quite a while, and he's a fine Talmud Chacham, said he has another reason. He quoted the Tumim. It's from Rabbi Yonatan Epshitz, that the Shulchan Aruch was written with Ruach HaKodesh. So I have to tell you, on this level, I have two comments to make. One, in the Litvische Welt, I never in my life heard them say, the Chelike Rashi hat gesagt. Okay? I never heard it. Not in YU, not with the Altamir, and not with the Shanghai crowd, not with Mori Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik. In Lakewood, I never heard it. When we learned, and there was, we were, I don't want to use the word equals, but we yelled, we shouted, we tried to understand. But that's one comment, but that's a minor comment. I have a different comment. Pardon me, the Shulchan Aruch was written with Ruach HaKodesh, fine. So one second, the Mishneh Torah, the Rambam didn't write Ruach HaKodesh? The Rif didn't write Ruach HaKodesh? The Rush didn't write Ruach HaKodesh? So I don't know whether the fourth reason is valid. As a litvak, I can't accept it. But I'd like to hear a chassidische... one second. I have a problem. It's not easy to teach in Grist. That's all I can tell you. Not easy. Not easy at all.
Give it a bang.
Give it a bang. Let's see. You turn it off and turn it on again. Okay.
We...
One second. No, that's not... They had all this. I don't... Oh, I understand. This has to be like this, perhaps. Okay. Okay. All right. Sorry. As a Litvisha, it's hard for me to accept. And I thought the challenge, explain to me how you single out the Shulchan Aruch over the Rishonim, Gedolei HaMesorah. Okay. Then we got involved with the question, can you paskin against the Shulchan Aruch? And I'm going to do the last part of the final shiur first, because the first part we're going to build upon. So I told you I discussed this with the Rav and with the whole Shaila of Yontif Sheni, where the Rav paskins against the Shulchan Aruch, the Chaim Briska paskins against the Shulchan Aruch, the Chacham Tzvi paskins against the Shulchan Aruch, the Minchat Laza paskins against the Shulchan Aruch, the Chazon Ish, Rav Kook, Rav Shmuel Solant, Rav Chiyon Michal Tukachinsky. You go posek after posek who paskins against the Shulchan Aruch. All right, it's a good question. So the Rav took the approach, and I'm quoting his words, I don't say you can't paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, but if you paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, you have to know full well why you are paskining against the Shulchan Aruch. It can't be left to desultory, haphazard reasoning. And that was what the Rav told me. And then we went further and we raised an issue, then why do we say don't do malacha on the second day? And one of the reasons the Rav said is to give cover to the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch, in other words, at least not to do malacha the second day in Israel. Another reason, of course, is people are going to go back and forth, and they have to understand that Kol Zman, they're living in the Golah, they have to observe 2 days. They can't go back and say, last year we were in Yerushalayim on Pesach, we observed 1 day, we intend to go back next year, we plan Aliyah 2 years from now. I already got the Shaila Halach L'maisa, kids going back, say, Rebbe, we're coming in Aliyah Nu. A funny thing happened to me on the way to Tel Aviv. Gamal Abdul Nasser wrote a book like that after the Six-Day War. That was one of the jokes circulating in Israel. But, you know, many people have plans of Aliyah, and I don't have to tell you, a funny thing happened to me on the way to Lod Airport. So, and this was my discussion with Rebbe. Now, that discussion is not really Rebbe. This goes back to the Vilna Gaon. And here, once again, we're going to come to Reb Chaim Volozhin, and we're going to see some very fascinating sources. But I think, I don't remember who asked, I think it was Rabbi Rubin, did Reb Chaim Volozhin have a last name? Very good question. Someone in class asked it. So I told you I didn't know. So I still don't know, but let me tell you what's come up. Josh Schneider, should live and be well, researched it. So he says that the Wikipedia calls him Chaim Itzkovitz. Okay? And he gives sources why this may be the last name.
But...
Could be his son was Yitzchak. Check, maybe the son was named after the grandfather. But interestingly enough, a new book came out. Now I have to admit, I am reading this new book, but my reading, you know, I'm learning reading, but being sure, so, and I had to put the book aside. Now I'll pick it up in a week or so, because another new book came out that I the Land of Legacy. So I want to. People are waiting for me to go through it and comment on it. Anyway, a book came out by Rabbi Beryl Wein and Rabbi Warren Goldstein. Does anyone know who Rabbi Warren Goldstein is? I spoke about him in class. He's the chief rabbi of South Africa. He considers, I know him quite well. He considers himself a Telza, because his rabbein were from Telz. Rabbi Tanzer and Rabbi Goldfein. If I'm right, Rabbi Goldfein is the name, I believe I'm right. And they put out a book on Lithuania. And in the book on Lithuania, they call Reb Chaim Volozhin Reb Chaim Rabinovich. So Josh Schneider rightfully says that that has to be a mistake. Why? Reb Chaim Rabinovich, they're probably confusing him with Reb Chaim Telza. Reb Chaim Telza was Reb Chaim Rabinovich. But Reb Chaim Volozhin, not Rabinovich, the name we get is Itzkowitz. Again, continue researching. Let's see if we come up. Let's see if he really had a last name. Let's see if he was required to have a last name. We need someone who knows the period historically to put it into context. But anyway, it's an interesting question, and I thank Josh Schneider for his research. Now, Reb Chaim Volozhin, we went to the Makor Baruch. As I explained to you, the Makor Baruch is Reb Baruch HaLevi Epstein. It's a very fascinating volume. It is the opposite of his Torah Tamima. What makes the Torah Tamima so attractive is it is beautifully organized. On every pasuk, it gives you Maimari Chazal. Underneath, there's a master commentary by Reb Baruch HaLevi. It is organized beautifully, and every boy and girl who goes to Bnei Akiva, who has to prepare a Devar Torah for Sudash Lishit on Shabbat, uses the Makor Baruch. I can tell you, I have seen it with my own eyes.
You mean the Torah Tamima?
The Makor Baruch is exactly the opposite. Thousands of pages, biography, memoirs, Chidushei Torah, grammar, insights, critiques on the world, predictions, all mixed together. What we call in popular language a chalent. And the Makor Baruch, it's fascinating to deal with, but you have to be able to handle the chalent part of it. I look forward to one day one of you young men will devote your life to putting out an edited edition of the Makor Baruch, the biography part, the memoir part, and the Chidushei Torah part, the grammar, and put everything into different sfarim, as they're doing with the legacy of Rabbi Chiyo Yaakov Weinberg today. Now, in the Makor Baruch, you have the unbelievable case I described to you, and this case rings bells in halachic literature until today. Why? Because all of you study Jaredeya, and all of you know, a halacha, if you cut a radish with a knife, a radish is pungent, and if the knife was milchiks, the radish is milchiks, if the knife was fleshiks, then right or wrong?
Yes.
That's the halacha. Okay? So the woman came to Reb Chaim with the shaila that she had cut a radish chveis with a milchik, a knife, and it was a ben yomo, And then she cooked the radish with meat, then she was all worried, and Reb Chaim Paskind asked her what color was the skin of the radish. And when the woman answered it was black, that it was white and not black, he permitted, and it said, not a problem, the knife was clean, there was nothing be'en, a white colored skin of a radish is not pungent. So when the woman left, the students jumped on Reb Chaim, and you know the way Reb Chaim taught, the way the Vilna Gaon taught, the way Reb Chaim Brisker taught, the way Reb Velvel taught, they didn't give formal classes. They sat in the shtibel, in the Beis Medrash, and they were learning, and people sat around them while they were learning and talking and learning, and watched when the shailas came in, and when the woman walked out, the students jumped on Reb Chaim, Reb Chaim Volozhin. What are you doing? It's against the Shulchan Aruch. What difference does it make, black or white? So Reb Chaim gave his discourse, and Reb Chaim said that I don't like the paskin against the Shulchan Aruch. I don't want a paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, but I really hold that radishes are not pungent. But it's in Eretz Yisrael, where the Shulchan Aruch wrote his psak, there the radishes are black, and the black are much more pungent than the white ones we have in Russia, and therefore I paskin what I paskin. Now, let us go further. I want to show you something fascinating. This is the latest issue of Yeshurun. It's volume 27. I put it into the library. It's worth looking at. It has material on the Mira Rosh Hashiva, Reb Natan Zvi Finkel from Chicago, who just died, Zechatzadik Levracha. It has material on Reb Chaim Zimmerman. It's not a scholarly work or a critical work. It's not the way I would write a biography of Reb Chaim Zimmerman. But there is interesting information there. There's a lot of Divrei Torah. It's a very thick volume. Yeshurun is Machon Yerushalayim, Machon Yeshurun, it's in New York, it's here. I believe its origins are basically with the German Jews, with the Yekes, as we say.
What volume is that?
27. So beginning on page Ayin Tet, why they don't give the pages in Roman numerals, I don't know. There's an article by Rav Eitam Henkin of Yerushalayim. I don't know who this Rav Eitam Henkin is. I'll venture a guess. It's the son of Rav Yehuda Herzl Henkin and Chana Henkin, okay, of Nishmat. I'll venture a guess. If your wives study there, you can check it out and let me know. And he writes an article on the Aruch HaShulchan and his family. It's a fascinating article, the children, what became of the children, and in writing this article, he analyzes, when he gets to Rav Baruch HaLevi, who is the son of the Aruch HaShulchan, he analyzes the relationship between Rav Baruch HaLevi Epstein, the Torah Tamima, the Makab Baruch, and his father, the Aruch HaShulchan, Rabbi Chiel Michel Epstein. And he raises the problem that in Makar Baruch, he barely quotes his own father. But he's filled with information about his uncle, the Netziv of Volozhin. And of course, there can be a very simple reason why. You tell me. He came to Volozhin as a kid, 13, 14. He barely knew his father. How many times did he return home? He remained in Volozhin at the table of the Netziv. But what's fascinating is that the prime example that this young Rabbi Henkin uses to show the chasm between Rav Baruch HaLevi and his father, Rav Yechiel Michel, the Aruch HaShulchan, is the example of the radish. Why? Because when you come to the example of the radish, it plays a very important role in the Makar Baruch. I would say that story with the radish is the most widely quoted part of the Makar Baruch. Yes, there's another part that's widely quoted because of contemporary Hashkafic Machlokes, the part about the Netziv, where he writes about his uncle that Friday night after the meal, when he was tired and couldn't learn anymore, he read the Haskalah literature, the Haskalah newspapers. And all of you know what happened out of that description when they translated it into English. My uncle, the Netziv, and the Talmud Torah in Lakewood, the Chayda, sent out a copy of my uncle, the Netziv, for donations. And an outcry, and they had to send an apology, put the book into Chayrim, ask you to bring the book back, they'll give you back the money, the donation. Oh, what went on. But outside of the contemporary politics, the story of the radish, did Rabbi Bedmash quote it when you learned the Siman in the Shulchan Aruch? What is it, Tzadi Zayin? You're not learning Yeridaya. So it's Tzadi Vav. Thank you. So it's the most widely quoted part. So Rabbi Henkin makes the point that here in the Makar Baruch, he describes the whole story with Rav Chaim Volozhin, and he never quotes his father, who openly discusses the issue. And here, quote the Aruch HaShulchan, and I'll quote the Aruch HaShulchan to you. Siman Sadivav, Sif Katan Yud Gimel, in the Aruch HaShulchan, right at the end in brackets, Ubialduti Shamati Me'echar HaGadoylim, Shagon Echad Hekil Beretech Sheklipato Levana, V'yamah Shoto Sheklipato Shacha Hucharif Biyoter, V'hachush Me'id Kach, V'yamah Shaharetach HaGadilim Be'eretz Yisrael, U'babavel Kulam Klipatam Shora U'marim Habei, V'efshal Lismoch Al Zeh Bishat Hefseid. So you see, take a look in the year 2013, Yeshurin, 27th volume, once again, back to the story of the radish. And here you see, why didn't he call Derech HaShulchan? Here, his great father says openly, it's interesting, he says, Shomati Begon Echad, he doesn't mention the name of Chaim Volozhin, he doesn't tell you what he heard, about whom he heard, but essentially, it has to be this story. And he draws the same distinction. Tell me, have any of you ever seen a black colored radish? I think in American, Italian vegetable stores, I saw it.
No, horseradish is not black.
There are. I remember. I never saw in Israel, but I remember as a kid growing up for unique vegetables. They were bigger. Right. I think they used to mix them in with schmaltz. Right. Okay. So it's fascinating, but you see. The why you Yitzchak?
I don't say a word. Let's say a word. I promised myself not to say.
Why?
Because your sentence and you gave this already.
I didn't give. What are you talking about? Yeshurin?
Yeshurin is no.
I said it's no. I have to revive your memory. Now we're rolling. Relax. That's not right. The teacher has to what? And the Rav didn't say Vasabachuzak Let's Tavach. And he spent 20 minutes going through the shiur, and then he went. What do you want out of me? I ichtuvi mein rebbe hat getan. That's I can tell you many stories about that, but it's not for now. But ichtuvi mein rebbe hat getan. Baruch Hashem. Anyway, it's very fascinating. But what do we see from here? Ah, now you come to the heart of Rav Chaim Volozhin. And gentlemen, I'll give you the sources in a minute. But Reb Chaim Volozhin and his Talmidim recorded this, and Reb Chaim himself recorded it, that the Gaon was furious with people who passed him from the Shulchan Aruch. The Gaon felt, and this comes back to that original source I quoted in the Masechet Sota, that if you're just going to take a finished text, the Mishnah, and you don't know the sources and you don't work it out, that you are mavalei ha'olam, that you are destroying the world, you are bringing hevel to the world. The Gaon felt you have to work the sources out, and then you look at the Shulchan Aruch, and if you agree with the Shulchan Aruch, fine. If you disagree, but you have a strong case, you have the right to stand on your two feet. Now, why is this so important? If you go back about 10 years ago, or more already, so if you recall, in my classes on the Vilna Gaon, I raised a very basic question. The Gaon himself totally criticized the Hasidim. They changed halacha, they changed practice. And if you look at the Gaon, there are, I would say, tens and tens, if not hundreds and hundreds, of little areas where he changed the halacha hamakubalat, right or wrong. You don't need a better example than say tonight when all of Klal Yisrael takes 3 matzot and the Gaon took 2 matzot. You all know that in Yerushalayim everyone claims that the Gaon did not lay in Leil HaSeda. All right, we discussed it in length. But again,
Leil
HaSeder.
There's no Kriya Leil HaSeder.
No. That the davening. I mean at Mariv. No. Excuse me. That the Gaon did not say Hallel Leil HaSeder. Or did not say Kriyat HaTorah. I mixed up. I juxtapositioned. You're absolutely right. Thank you. And the Gaon did not lay in on Leil Simchas Torah. No, it goes against open psukim in the Shulchan Aruch. And you can give so many other examples, what the Gaon left out, what the Gaon did, what the Gaon understood. So, of course, we ask the question, how could the Gaon be so anti-Hasidus? And he himself made so many changes. And you all know, Maisa Rav, if you study Maisa Rav, it's a different, the davening, even the davening we do, the Gaon never said, Miz Mashiach, Hanukkah Tabayat. Why? Because it's being Mabe B'Mismorim. Mismorim can only be set, Psukei Dezimra, between Baruch Shama and Yishtabach. And believe me, the Gaon knew what he was doing. He had sources for everything. So the question is very powerful. So if you recall, I gave two answers at the time. One answer was, and I quoted to you from the Chazon Ish, that the Gaon was a throwback to the Rishonim. And since he was so learned and so knowledgeable, and I gave you sources for this. It's not a Hasidic Vat, they're sources. He was like a Rishon. A Rishon can argue with the Shulchan Aruch. And then I said something else, which I think is perhaps more correct, that if you take all the changes the Vilna Gaon made and add it up halachically in a scale of 1 to 10, it doesn't amount to 1 or 2. In other words, say you take 2 matzot instead of 3 matzot. All right. It's not the end of the world. So you didn't say, you didn't do Kriyat HaTorah. You didn't say Hallel. What the Hasidim did... What? You didn't say Hallel Leil HaSeder?
Even in Queens, when I was living in Queens, as the years went by, yes, but at the beginning, if you wanted to say Hallel, you stayed after Shul, and you had the only meal, and the others, everyone went home.
There's a story circulating that that one of Revelvel's sons, or Revelvel, I think it was Revelvel with Reb Chaim, that Revelvel, Seder night, came back and told his father he davened in a shtibble, and they sang Hallel beautifully, and Reb Chaim got upset with him, that what? You said Hallel, Bracha Levatola, but okay, so in the Queens, where I grew up, they did say Hallel, where I daven in Israel, they never say Hallel, but all right, you take all these changes, the Chassidim went, and they were Mevatel, Tefillah Bizman, Kriyat Shah Bizman. They were mavatel, eating in a sukkah on Shmini Atzeret, which is an open gemara, sukkah daf mem zayin. Yait ha-yatmin in barach lo mavachinan. So those were two answers I gave 10 and a half, 13 years ago, whenever it was. Yes, Eliyama.
What does Jerry say about like zman, with it being
a time? Bizmanim in America were machmi. You should know that when the Hasidim came to America, I yet saw with my own eyes Hasidim smoking after Shkia. I saw them come out of the mikveh and they're taking a so I want to tell you, in America, there you can be machmir. In other words, what happens in America today, we take Shabbos in early, and there are many, all of Borough Park takes Shabbos out late. So you understand? So there you can work out. You don't. So the Gaon abolished. He didn't abolish, but besides that, he had his own shita. He had his own viewpoint. But today, I want to tell you perhaps the most important answer is what I just said to you, that the Gaon began a tradition which is carried over by Reb Chaim Volozhin, which continues down to this day with every posek of any stature. That we love the Shulchan Aruch, we surrender to the Shulchan Aruch, we give tremendous cover to the Shulchan Aruch, we try not to budge from the Shulchan Aruch, but if the sources indicate otherwise, we have a right to paskin against the Shulchan Aruch. Now, I want to show you something very fascinating. In the State of Israel, you have a whole genre of publications.
for instance, you know if something is going to come out from Hebrew University, it's going to be on a scholarly level. Something that comes out from Shokin, it has to be scholarly. All right, we can give many examples. A book just came out, I told you it's over 900 pages, I'm about 200 pages into it on the Chazon Ish. It is a top scholarly work. You can agree or disagree. A Talmud already sent me a review that finds a lot of fault with the book, but it's scholarly. You talk about Reb Chaim, my classmate, Dr. Grach, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik's Yeinam. It's probably the most scholarly work in the history of Chochmat Yisrael. It's an absolute synthesis between a Gaon Adir, who knows Shas and Paiskim backwards and forwards, and the scientific approach. All right, but then you have the Haredi press today, and print is very cheap, and they are publishing books wholesale as well. So I kept on hearing that there's a nice volume on Reb Chaim Volozhin. I picked it up. I have the latest edition. It's called Sefer Avi HaYeshivot, Toldot Chayav U'Mishnato Shemoran Rabbeinu Chaim Volozhin Zeichet Tzadik V'Kodesh Levracha L'Chayei HaOlam Haba. If you know Zatzuk Lalach, hey, that's what it stands for. And it's published by someone, it's authored by someone named Dov Eliach. And Dov Eliach is evidently a product of, I would imagine, the Panovich, a product of the yeshiva world. And you read the book, and I am not criticizing him, he's writing from his point of view, but from a person coming from my Weltanschauung, there's a lot of Achmas Nefesh here. Let me just digress for 1 minute to show you what I'm talking about, but then we'll come back to the radish. Page 678, he deals with the haskamot that Reb Chaim Volozhin gave. So one of the haskamot was to Reb Shlomo Dubnow, who wrote a Sefer Digduk Sofrim on Tanakh. Who is Reb Shlomo Dubnow? He was a Talmud of Reb Moshe Mendelssohn. So he writes here, I couldn't believe my eyes, the personality of Reb Shlomo Dubnow, he at first was a Talmud of Mendelssohn, and he writes about Mendelssohn, Shin Reish Yud. Does anyone know what that stands for? Shem Rishaim Yirkav. That's what he writes about Mendelssohn. And I have to tell you, that approach to Mendelssohn is sinful. It's sinful because you're not preparing your family, your students, for the real world. Mendelssohn was the Ur Einikel, the great-grandson of the Ramah. Mendelssohn was a big Talmud Chacham. He corresponded with Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Mendelssohn was a Shemesh Shabbos to the day he died. His wife covered her hair more piously than any of our wives cover their hair. I've seen her picture. And all right, his children, we know what happened. I can mention names of Gedolei Yisrael, who we all revere, whose children, lo aleinu, some of them became Catholics, high up in the church, professors, totally irreligious, pictures on the wall that the Herr Rabbina, that was their grandfather. That was the period. That, you all know what we went through in the United States, that we're sitting here is a miracle. That Steve, that you and I are showing the mitzvah is a miracle. Come on, let's not play games. We know what the percentages were. Your family got to America when? In the 20s?
1898.
1896
and 9.
Listen.
My grandfather came in 1896,
and my grandmother
came 3 years later.
But the kids. Okay, and my grandparents came 1900. So he writes, when Dubnow left Mendelssohn, that's when he gave him Haskama. But that is nothing. Beginning on page 539,
he has an entire chapter on how to paskin. What was Reb Chaim's shita on paskining? And he struggles. You have no idea how he twists words. Because Reb Chaim's shita you can find written out. It's in the name of the Gaon. He gives all the sources where you can find it. And Reb Chaim's shita was, first you work out the sugya on your own. And only then do you look at the Shulchan Aruch. And if you agree, you agree with the Shulchan Aruch. And if you disagree, you have every right to disagree. And this was the tradition from Reb Chaim.
Is this a biography of the Vilna Gaon, or this is
a biography of Reb Chaim V'Lashin? Yeah, the Miyased, it says, I said to you, Moran Reb Chaim V'Lashin, Rosh Talmidei Hagram Yaseid Yeshivat V'Lashin. Now, he has very fascinating material here, some of which I heard myself when I learned in Lakewood. And he struggles. And he evidently, in the first edition, was much more honest. In the first edition, he actually quoted Reb Chaim verbatim and made it clear that you have to learn on your own. You just can't take the Shulchan Aruch. You have to work it out. And if you paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, you have every right to. In this edition, it is all toned down. And he writes, I quote to you word by word. This is on page 541 in the middle of footnote 6. He says, in the first edition, I quoted concepts in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Leib Diskin, who had traditions from the Gaon. This is Rabbi Diskin, who was Brisker Rav, and Rabbi Yehoshua, I believe it's Rabbi Yehoshua Leib Diskin. He was from the Brisker Rav, he was Brisker Rav before Rabbi Yosef Dov, and afterwards he was Rav of Yerushalayim. And I left it out of this edition because Maran Hagon Reb Yosef Shalom Eliashiv Shlita Vagon Reb Chaim Kenevsky Shlita advised me that even though they agree with these concepts, the masses will not understand them properly. Al Kol Zeh, because of this, Ra'ui LaHashmit HaShmua LeMan HaSeh Kol Lazut Svatayim. People shouldn't criticize you. People shouldn't say you're a shaketz. And I left out what I had in the name of Reb Chaim and the Vilna Gaon. But this is exactly the problem here. I'll articulate the problem in a few minutes. And here he has very, very fascinating that there's a tradition that Reb Aaron Cutler said publicly that the Gaon said to Reb Chaim, in Tuva Ramah, you can argue with a Svara, but in Tuva Rush, you have to absolutely have proof. You follow? In other words, the Rishonim, if you're going to argue, you have to have the strongest proofs in the world. The Ramah, you can still argue with a Svara. And he quotes Reb Chaim Sonnenfeld that he said in the name of Rav Diskin that Pam Sha'al Reb Chaim Atagra, can I differ with the Shach? And the Gaon answered him, if you have clear proofs, then you can differ. So then Reb Chaim said, can I differ with the Rush? And the Gaon said, Chas v'chalila, afilu v'mashma'ot shemidivrei harosh asur lazuz. That not even if the Rush said it openly, but if he implied it, you're not allowed to budge, you're not allowed to leave, you're not allowed to contradict him. This is the Rishon, this is the Rush. So you see, it's very fascinating. He has to admit that Reb Chaim and the Gaon had a point of view, which I heard from my Rebbe, that you don't accept the Shulchan Aruch blindly. You have to go back to the sources, you have to work them out, and only after you work them out do you see what the Shulchan Aruch, the Shach, the Taz, the Magen Avram had to say. And if you can't agree with them, you have a right to go on your own. And later on that page, he brings down the story of the radish. You see, that story comes back time and again. And he goes on to explain, how do you view the Shulchan Aruch? How do you view learning? The Hamon Ha'am views the Shulchan Aruch as the meat. The sources, Shas and Rishonim, as spices. We have to view Shas and Rishonim as the meat. The Shulchan Aruch and the Nosei Kelim are spices. Fascinating. Exactly the question that we struggle with. Can you paskin against the Shulchan Aruch? Even Dover Eliach has to admit hesitantly, he doesn't do it blatantly, he leaves out material, but the tradition is strong. If the sources indicate something different, you have a right to paskin differently. That's why he's suffering, because this tradition in the name of the Vilna Gaon is so well known that he can't leave it out altogether. And you got to read the whole perek, how he tries to restate it, he tries to tone it down, but as much as he tries, he can't get away from the radish story. You follow? Okay. This leads us one step further. A very basic question. A Talmud of mine, Dov Reifer from Muncie, asked the question, but I've been asked this question 1,000 times over, and everyone in this room has asked himself this question. What do we say in Pirkei Avot? We say Aseilach HaRav. Alright? We all need a Rebbe. It's basic to Yiddishkeit. I've given many drashot and many talks from the Kollel and many Sheyurim, why Torah Shebal Peh, Torah goes with Mesorah, Ala Tzadikim, V'Yahas Chassidim, V'Yahas Skenim, V'Yah Pleitat Sofrehim, Pleitat, underline, there has to be continuity, you have to have a Rebbe, you have to reach out to a Sofa, which means a Talmud Chacham of the earlier generation. Fine. Torah Shebal Peh, critically important. Aseilach HaRav. We all need a Rebbe. A Chassid has a Rebbe all his life. I'm jealous of a Chassid. You have the Rav on tape talking at Yutet Kislev after his wife died in Boston, and the Rav breaks down and cries and says, I wish I could be a Chassid and have a Rebbe to unburden myself, to share with me. And many Chassidim will tell you, they relate to a Rebbe. They correct them. It didn't correct me. It supplements what I said. But if you recall, when I spoke on Das Torah, I said that Das Torah comes from a Chassid-Rebbe relationship. And they said there's an element of a father image in that relationship, true. And it's very, very correct. So Aseilach HaRav is basic, the passing on Yiddishkeit. But there's one simple question. Tell me. Can we differ with our Rebbe? Do we have to do everything as the Rebbe did? I want to ask the Rebbe's views on the idea that if you hold like one posek, you must hold like all his psakim. All his psak. And he quotes the Gemara where Shmuel heard like, because sometimes they split. He holds like this Rebbe, that Rebbe. Fine. It's a good question. And I want to tell you, this question is exactly part of the Eliach problem. And Let me share with you what I think would be the proper answer. And this is a question that you're going to get no matter what you do in life, in the rabbinate, in chinuch, you're going to constantly get this question. I struggle with it, but I've reached the following conclusion. For the masses, you absolutely have to say, do like your Rebbe. I've learned in life the hard way that the Litvisha approach that I was raised on cannot be a mass movement. It is impossible. The Litvisha approach, you have to be learned, you have to have a certain type of mind, a certain disposition. It works. It works very well for the chosen few. The masses, this is the greatness of Hasidus. This is why Hasidus is so powerful today, that even the New York Times stands up and takes notice. You see with Satan what's going on with Metzitza Bepet today. Where did Satan get that power? Where did I was last night, Menachem Avil, in the Galinsky house, so Sonia told me her nephew, or great-nephew, died from the Brit. Herpes. The kid died. And right now there's a case in Yerushalayim where the kid was very seriously ill. They flooded him with antibiotics. They say the kid is a little better. Herpes. It's terrible, terrible. It's mamish. How can Satmar have that point of view? How can Agudat Yisrael join with Satmar? If I be a member of Agudat, I'd send back my membership. That's it. Finished. I don't want to be a member of a group like this. I don't want to be frummer than the Chatam Sofer. I don't want to be frummer than the Prime Briska.
What was his name?
Leitzman.
I got him out.
I hope so. Let's hope that that's the reason. But be it as it may, the masses, Satmar is very powerful. You talk with Chassidim, it's very powerful. You talk today with Litvish so-called yeshivat, the kids treat their Rosh Yeshiva like their Hasidic Rebbeim. And all of us have had this experience. And I've come to make my peace with it. What's my choice? That the kid should go off the path? That he should be a Mechalel Shabbos? Let him worship his Rebbe. Let him follow his Rebbe. So on a simple level, I remember talking with the Rav. And the Rav was pressed against the wall, was astir with a Beis Yaakov girl, with Yontif Sheni in Eretz Yisrael. So the Rav told, this is what I'm told, that the Rav told her, they told you, observe Yontif Sheni. So someone said to Rebbe, you hold like the Chacham Tzvi. And the Rav said, what do you think, I'm crazy? I don't want to confuse her. You see, she's simplistic. I'm going to start telling her the Chacham Tzvi. Hold what they told you 2 days. Now, there's a lot of truth to this. Someone who knows how to learn, chas v'chalila, you should be a clone of your Rebbe. Because a real Rebbe, what is a Rebbe's goal in life? That his students should be able to stand on their own 2 feet. And this takes us back. Nu Yitzchak, remember the Rev's Drasha, 1968, in memory of Rebbitz and Tanya, where he differentiated between a mother personality and a father personality? What is a mother? A mother is rechem, rachmanut. She ba'bit ni, what Shlomo HaMelech's mother says, Bathsheba says to the king, ba'bit ni, the son of my womb. A mother never wants to let go of a child. That's why the Mishnah says in Yevamah that a mother-in-law and a daughter-in-law can't say eitet for each other. Why? It's a chazakah, shesonot, zu etzu. The mother-in-law resents the son-in-law, the daughter-in-law, who took away her most precious item, her son. Okay. This we can understand. The mother-in-law, son-in-law, that's a woman. When a child leaves home, she's upset. Her son, her child, part of her womb, rechem, bapitni, I'm quoting the Rav. A father is a teacher. And it teaches greatest goal, the kid should stand on his own 2 feet. Ka'av ham yased b'no. Turn into a mensch. Be independent. I don't have sons, thank God. I could have never raised sons properly for many reasons. But I see my son-in-law, his sons, he taught them how to fight. Don't let anyone push you around. Stand on your own 2 feet. Wow. This is a teacher. Son gets married, the mother is b'mistarim tifkenafshi. The mother is crying inside. The father, Baruch Shapatrani Meon Shel Shazam, he's the happiest guy alive. This is a teacher. And you have a right to stand on your own 2 feet. And I want to tell you, I once challenged my colleague, my friend, my Reb Heschel Shechta. I said, Heschel, how do you paskin 2 full days? You're going against Rebbe. You knew Rebbe Shita. You spoke with Rebbe. I spoke with Rebbe. He was very, very strong on this. And he didn't answer me. And I said, no, I understand the answer. You're your own man. He said, no, this is what growing up is all about. And even Reb Heschel Shechta, if you recall, whenever he does something, he's in the public limelight. So they love to pick on him. Knew what was the big scandal about 5-6 years ago with Yontif Sheni? That he paskin for a girl who was coming with her family from, I believe it was Los Angeles, to Israel for Pesach. She could observe 1 day. And boy, did they go crazy. Rav Shachter always paskins 2 days. Why is he contradicting himself? Here he paskins 1 day. All right. He justified it. He wrote an article, as I recall, and it was already computer time. Everything is on the computers. He explained that her family was observing 1 day. So the girl is going with her father, her mother, her siblings, and this kibbutz aviyim, and she's going to drive them crazy if she doesn't observe 1 day the way they do, and the next day they're going on tiyulim and doing what all the Israelis are doing. So, all right, b'diyeved, you can be samech on the Rav Shitan, on Reb Chaim Brisker, on the Chacham Tzvi, on everybody else. But you see, this is independent thinking. So on this level, I come back to Reb Chaim, I come back to the white radish and the black radish. Yes, the Shulchan Aruch has unbelievable stature. Hiskimu aleihem kol Yisrael. I don't say that it's the end of Pesach. Only a fool would say that. Life is ongoing. But until today, we have never reached a sefer that has the status of the Shulchan Aruch. To paskin lahalacha? All right. We have to take in consideration the Shulchan Aruch, the Nosei Kelim. But before we do that, if you're a real posek, you have to be like Reb Moshe. You have to work out the Gemara. You have to work out the Rishonim. And then you deal with the Shulchan Aruch. We try our best to converse with the Shulchan Aruch, to have a confluence with the Shulchan Aruch. But b'di'evit, if we can't, we can't.
How is the Rav Moshe's view?
Whose view? Just what I said. Reb Moshe, we're going to come into the whole, I know what you're leading into, I'll articulate it in a second, but essentially Reb Moshe, Shulchan Aruch is the Shulchan Aruch, but occasionally he would put together reasons and simanim and snifim why he would paskin bishat hadachak against the Shulchan Aruch. And this is the tradition from the Vilna Gaon through Reb Chaim Volozhin. And those of us who knew the Rav, see, it was very interesting. When we spoke of the Mishnah Brura, we spoke of the Mishnah Brura b'dechilu rechimu. We were shaking the Mishnah Brura, the Chafetz Chaim. The Rav spoke of the Mishnah Brura like an equal. You understand? His generation, Brisk, did not yet bow to the Shulchan Aruch. It's fascinating. So I told you, the Aruch HaShulchan, you see, the big difference, Danny Schulman gave me an interesting article. It seems that Professor Broyd, with some students helping him, is coming out with a book on Psak and dealing with the Mishnah Brura, and he deals with the differences. He's going to show 250 places where the Mishnah Brura was a posek on his own and where he differs with the Aruch HaShulchan. Fine. So I still stand on what I understand to be the difference between the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan. And I believe I may have heard it from the Rav or somewhat from the Rav. And the difference is very simple. The Mishnah Brura is a malakeid. He collects opinions. After he collects opinions, he balances out the psak. He weighs. And this is why in the Mishnah Brura, you'll so many times, la'achmir la'chatchila, b'di'eved, you follow me, an adam gadol is nisa, yirei shamayim is makpid. What's his lashon exactly? It's similar like I just said. How zahir b'nafsho, you understand, would keep. But he's weighing different opinions. I'll give you a classic example, but not yet, when we deal with Erev. The Aruch HaShulchan takes an analytical approach. And once he analyzes something and reaches a conclusion, he pushes away all the other shittat. And that's why you'll see in the Aruch HaShulchan many times, v'dok. Now, no one knows exactly what v'dok means. No one has yet established exactly what those Rashi Tevas means. But what it means, halacha l'maisa, you have to look into it. It doesn't make sense what they're saying. Be more careful. V'tzarechiyun. 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 You'll always see at the end, he'll wind up, look into this more carefully, I don't understand why he's taking a certain point of view. The Mishnah Brura generally will always reach a conclusion. Many times the conclusion will have a lachatchila and a bidiyavad. And that's the way I view the difference between them. The reason the Mishnah Brura conquered the world, I think there are two reasons. One reason is simply the Mishnah Brura was a folk hero. We didn't have anyone else who so captivated the entire gestalt of the Jewish people. The Chofetz Chaim, the stories are legendary. The man was a malach. As I told you, it ended and it began and ended with the, if you grew up in that era, the Mishnah Brura was everything. I told you the story with the Sheitlach, when they asked wearing a sheitel, when there was a big campaign here about 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and they came to Rav Shach, and he refused to sign the prohibition. So people asked, Rav Shach, did this Rebbe sign, that Rebbe signed, the Sephardic world signed on, the Eidah Haredit signed on, Rav Shach shouldn't sign on? Rav Shach said, certainly I can't sign on. The Chofetz Chaim's frei is gegangen mit the Sheitel. He said, the Chofetz Chaim's wife went with the Sheitel. How can I ask for something that the Chofetz Chaim permitted? See, that was the attitude towards the Chofetz Chaim. The second reason I think that the Mishnah Brura caught on, it's a lot easier to understand than the Aruch HaShulchan. The Aruch HaShulchan goes through all of Shas and Paiskim. It takes the Mishnah, takes Rashi, takes Tosfot, takes the Rambam, takes the Rush, takes the Rif. He works out a sugya from A to Z.
It's like having a private
rabbi. But you have to have the mind that can handle it. The Mishnah Brura flows a lot easier. He also doesn't give you the Gemara in detail with Rashi and Tosfot and Rambam. He divides it up. He has Pilpul, he has sources. By the way, his sources are not good, meaning he doesn't give you an exact daf many times, doesn't give you, he gives you a general source. Today I'd like to see someone come out with, maybe there is an edited edition of the Mishnah Brura where the source is exactly right on. because general sources are no good for our generation when we don't walk around with Shas and Peskin by heart in our heads. So it's a very fascinating area. But be it as it may, the Shulchan Aruch is the heart of Psak.
Yeah. Chaim is not criticizing, he's just interpreting. The Shulchan Aruch was
No, the Chafetz Chaim will never criticize. He will never be as sharp as Derech HaShulchan, because there's a difference in their mentality. Derech HaShulchan geht mit daher. When he reaches a certain concept, he'll throw the whole world down. He's a Litvisher, he's a Posite. But the Chafetz Chaim, it was, we called him HaChassid, HaChafetz Chaim. There was Chassidus in him. Not the Chassidus of modern times, but the Chassidus of these are machlokes. We have to see the majority. This is Devar Hashem. We have to be very careful. Chafetz Chaim is the Chafetz Chaim. What can I tell you? No story compares to the Harry Fishel story. I mean, you just think about it today with all our problems with money scandals, what goes on, how the Harry Fishel comes to the Chafetz Chaim and offers to buy him all new furniture. And the Chafetz Chaim says to him, tell me, Mr. Fishel, when you travel now, do you have the same luxurious surroundings like you have back in New York on Park Avenue? Of course not. He says, I'm also traveling. This is not my real home. It's only temporary. It's Olam HaEmet that I'm looking forward to. There's a second version to the story, which is even more beautiful, that Mr. Fishel was insistent, I want to do something for you. And the Chafetz Chaim said, well, my youngest daughter just got engaged, and the Chatan has no money. Maybe you'll give him the money to buy my daughter a piece of jewelry. And that's what Mr. Fishel gave his money for, to buy a piece of jewelry. These are Gedolei Yisrael. This is the Chafetz Chaim. It's beautiful. The story of the Chafetz Chaim, where he's traveling to Rotten, and this person gets on the wagon with him, and he turns to this elderly Jew, and they start a conversation, and the Jew asks him, and why are you going to Rotten? And he says, Ich will kriegen a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim, as a goyin, as a tzaddik, as a chassid. And the elderly Jew says to him, oh, he's not such a big tzaddik, he's not such a big chassid. And this Jew slaps him. How do you dare speak that way about the Chafetz Chaim? They get off and rotten, one goes home, one goes to an inn. And the next morning he comes to daven with the Chafetz Chaim, and he takes a look. The man he slapped was the Chafetz Chaim. And he didn't know what to do. He went over, and the Chafetz Chaim said, no, you taught me something. You taught me that it's usur for a human being to speak Lashon Hara about himself. He said, until yesterday, I thought Lashon Hara only applies about others, but I can put myself down. And you taught me it's usur for a human being to speak Lashon Hara about himself. Okay. So that's my take, but I don't know if I'm right or wrong. There'll be endless scholarship yet on the Chafetz Chaim, and it'll be very fascinating to see the 250 examples and what they do with it out of Atlanta, Georgia, which today is the center of Torah, not only of Coca-Cola. Now we go one step further. Fine. We've accepted the Shulchan Aruch. We can't disregard the Shulchan Aruch. Even when we paskin against the Shulchan Aruch, to quote Rebbe, or to quote the Vilna Gaon, as related by Reb Chaim Voloshin, you better know full well why you're paskining against the Shulchan Aruch. But now I want to ask you a question. Those of you who have learned Yoredeya, and in Yoredeya it's blatant. It's not that much in the other Chalkei Shulchan Aruch, but in Yoredeya it is blatant. Time and again, you will find the Shulchan Aruch says something, and then he says, Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim, Yesh Omrim. And he leaves it. Which way do you go? Why did he give so many different psakim? Open up Basar V'Chalav. Take a look. Open up Treifat. Wherever you go, Yeshom Rim, Yeshom Rim, Yeshom Rim. A more basic question. Many times in Shulchan Aruch, and again, particularly in Yoredeya, you'll see concepts. Hepsid Merubah. Right or wrong? Orchim, guests are coming. Poor man, rich man. It's a big difference. I think I told you in Michwala, where the girls did their own cooking, then they still do their own cooking, I never would paskin a shayla on a frying pan. I always told the girls, go and ask Rabbi Abraham. Why? Why did I tell them go and ask Rabbi Abraham? Because I'm a Talmud of the Rav, and the Rav held a frying pan. You have to do a Lieben Gomor. There's no way to kosher it without a blowtorch. And Rabbi Abraham studied in Chicago, and he studied with Rabbi Chaim David Regensburg, and Rabbi Regensburg held that a frying pan is no different than any pot, because you never fry without some liquid, without some oil. And therefore, you can do a Haggalah. A Haggalah is sufficient. I didn't want the girls. I considered them poor. They're in Israel. They're away from home. To go buy a frying pan, and that time in Israel, everything was so expensive. It's not like today. So, how do you deal with these klalim? Not only that. You all know, and I cite the Rav on this in my work on my Rebbe, there are moments in life, there are shailas and there are shailas. If you observe one day or 2 days Yantif, it's not the end of the world. All right, tourists come, some don't, some do. Rakefi gets upset when he sees people observing 2 days Yantif. But that's a personal matter, because I'm like the Tzemach Tzedek. I feel it's an infringement of the type of rays that emanate from God on Yantif Sheni. It's Cholamayit, it's not Yantif Sheni. But all right, it's a personal matter. Tell me, you get a shaila in Mamzeret. I had in this very building, a kid starts learning. It's before you, the younger people here were born. And he finds out his mother was married twice. And he's from the second marriage. And his mother was totally religious. She never got a get. Okay, you have a shaila of Mamzeret. And the shaila was sent to me. It was interesting. His rebellion in the morning told him, don't talk about it. Go and speak with Rabbi Rakefet or Rabbi Rothkopf at the time. Well, that's a shaila. That's not a simple shaila. I'll tell you in parentheses the end of that story. That one has a happy ending. What happened was I quizzed the kid, who was your rabbi in America? Turns out his rabbi was a good friend of mine, Ellie Marcus, Jamaica. Do you remember when Ellie was Rav in Jamaica? So I call Ellie, and Ellie's laughing. He says, there's no Shaila. What do you mean there's no Shaila? He says, her first husband was a guy, but she was ashamed to tell the kid he had become a Baal Tshuva. She was ashamed to tell him she was married to a guy first time around. No, if you're married to a guy, do you need a get or you don't need a get? There's the kedushin to a guy. It's Maisa Kof, that's all.
There was a case in Boston of Rabbi Savitsky deciding there was a woman who had children from a second husband and there was no get. So he said, I knew the rabbi in a small town in Russia. There's no way possible that that the woman left Russia without a get. He must have given her a get, and then it got lost. That's where he took it upon himself.
Wow.
And then he wrote up something. I don't know what he wrote up.
Well, all right. He has to know what he's doing. I mean, what you told me, I understand, but what you told me right now, halachically, does not make sense. If there's no get, there's no get. What kind of chazakah is it?
Well, I mean, she did not have a get.
He said he assumed that...
But did she say she had a get and then got lost? There's a big difference. It must be that she said she had a get and got lost, and he was somewhere. But people ran away. What, you don't know what went on in New York? You never looked at the Yiddish press 100 years ago? Time after time, there were advertisements. This man left a widow, left a living widow. People are searching. People left widows in New York. They ran away. Go west, young man. It's America's a wild country. Do whatever you want. Get lost in the crowd. Today it's harder to get lost because of the computerization. They can track you a lot better today. But even today, person disappears, leaves Borough Park, comes to B'nai Brak, grows a beard, gets lost, goes into the rabbinate, brings friends who testify, was never married. God, you can, even today you can pull terrible shtick. But these are different types of questions. Yantiv Sheni is Yantiv Sheni. Using an automatic elevator on Shabbos. All right. Look, you can do your research. You want to be machmir, all right. You don't want to be machmir, you have plenty of milas smoke. But it's not the end of the world whether you do or don't use an automatic elevator. What about if you have a kid becomes a Baal Tshuva, the kid is from Russia, and the kid meets an American girl and a fabulous couple, and they want to get married, and you start quizzing the kid from Russia. His mother was married 3 times. Each time to a Jew. He's from the third marriage. But it was all civil marriages under the communists. She never got a get. What kind of get? What Rabbanim? Who was in Russia to give gittin? He's from the third marriage. Is he a mamzer or isn't he a mamzer? The whole issue of civil marriage. This is an earth-shaking issue. It's probably the biggest issue that Rabbanim have had to deal with in the last 120 years. Okay, so how do you handle all this? Build an Erev, don't build an Erev. An Erev, 600,000, public thoroughfare. What is a public thoroughfare? Then an Erev, then you, Tzurat HaPesach is not enough. You have to build walls. No, go and build walls around Jerusalem. La Briot. These are fascinating questions. So I want to ask you, where does a Posek seek guidance? And now I'm talking, you know, on the highest level. You're a London, you know, the sources. You've worked the Siddur out. You know what I've told you. You got to work it out on your own. It's not good if you ask a big Posek and you don't know black and white. You have to understand what the Shaila is, what the sources are. Then you can ask Rabbi Ovadia Yosef for his Shikul Hadat. I told you the story with Rabbi Albert. I don't want to repeat. Remember the story with the Rav, with the Shaila of Mamzeret? And then the Rav says to him, Albert, I hope you worked out the sources. I'm not an encyclopedia for you. Today you say, I'm not a computer. And Albert, who had spoken with the Moshe Feinstein, tells the Rav, you know, Rebbe, well, I think this, that. The Rav says, Albert, ein zach kenach hachzaken. Haya moich is das nicht. This isn't your mind. This is too good for you. Yeah. One thing I can tell you. And then the Rav agreed with Rav Moshe, and they were matir. Well, whatever the shaila was, I don't know exactly, but the story is fascinating. So where do you go? Rabbi Roy Albert, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, the photographer of the Rav, Erwin Albert, Erwin A., his nickname was Roy.
I can see where he complained to Rav, why people don't ask him shaylos. But if he puts you down when you call...
That's a Talmud. You sound like the babies crying when they hear the stories of the Rav in the 40s, the 50s, into the 60s. You know, people jumped on me. Chaim Potok would have never left the yeshiva had the Rav been a mensch. You know, why did he yell and shout? But you got to understand, that was the Rav. Geniuses are geniuses.
But McKenny Brander, in this article in the Jerusalem Post, tried to make that the Rav was very, very sympathetic and compassionate for people who came after the shiur.
He was a different person in Boston than he was in New York. This goes without saying.
He was talking in New York.
Ken Zion.
In the class, he would brook no stupidity. If someone asked a silly question, he gave it to him.
Right.
But if you came to ask the question afterwards, he tried to picture the world as a very...
Fine. I'll accept that. Gentlemen, where do we get guidance? Okay. The Shach, the great Shach, left us a work that is unbelievable. You will find it and write down the source, look at it, familiarize yourself with it. We're going to spend many, many weeks on it. It's unbelievable, and when it's all over, you're going to be a lot more understanding of how Psak works. It's Shulchan Aruch Yeredeya, following Siman Reish Mem Bet. You have, and this is its title, I don't want to scare you with the title, but Pilpul Bahanagat Horat Be'isa V'cheta Meharav HaMechaber Skutoya Gein Oleinu Shaptai Kohen. And he uses the word pilpul. I wouldn't exactly say it's a pilpul. It's a very, it's two pages. Yeah, I can Xerox what I have in front of me. Yeah, it's not a problem. But it's easily available. It's in Shulchan Aruch Yeredeya, following Siman Reish Mem Bet. You can't miss it. It's a page and a half with a another comment. It's fabulous. Now, let me just end off what I've alluded to. On this question, who do we follow? Look into the second page where it's a kitzur. He gives you a kitzur, halacha lemaisa, had a paskin, sif katan hay. And remember, this is the Shach. When he gives the first opinion anonymously, in the sense he says, this is what we paskin. He doesn't say yesh omrim. That means that's his real feeling. That means that's what he really believes the halacha to be. So of course, immediately you have to ask, so why does he give yesh omrims? One, two, sometimes three. Why does he acknowledge different viewpoints? He just stated what he believes to be correct. So the Shach says so beautifully, whenever he will give different viewpoints, it is dealing with a rabbinic law. A Torah law, we are always machmir. Sefek d'oraita l'chumr. All of you should be familiar with this. The Rambam, Hilchot Mamrim, Perek Bet. This is Klal Gadol Amru b'Torah. Sefek d'oraita l'chumr. But in 90% of the questions we get, I mean not questions from a Baal Tshuva who just wants to learn about Yiddishkeit, but questions from learned people, from rabbis out in the field, 90% of the time you're dealing with rabbinic law. And in rabbinic law, we have to take subjective circumstances into consideration. Sometimes we don't want to be machmir. Hepsid Meruba, it's a poor man. We have another opinion, it's Shat HaTachak. We can depend upon that other opinion. Sometimes you can be the wealthiest man in the world, but if a drop of milk fell into a big pot of chicken soup 2 minutes before Shabbos, and there's no way to come up with new chicken soup, so even for a wealthy man, it's Shat HaDachak. You follow me, Jess? That's Hefsid Merubah for a wealthy man. Orchim, guest. Steve has many guests at his table Friday night. It's a big difference. If he has the problem Friday morning, he can go to Machne Yehuda and replace the problem. But if you have a problem 2 minutes before Shabbat, you see, this is why the Yesh Omrim, it leaves room for you to maneuver. This is the Shach. This is axiomatic for paskening halacha. And he says, could be that the original opinion that the Shulchan Aruch Paskin was a very famous Rishon. The Rush, the Rambam, the Rif. You don't want to Paskin against them. But there were other opinions. We want to state them so that in an emergency you have someone on who to depend. Okay? But all this is when we deal with a din d'rabbanan. When we deal with a suffek d'oraita, we can't be mekil afilu b'shat hadchak. V'yesh l'bal nefesh l'hachmir l'hatzmo b'isur Torah. And this is what he says in Sifkat and Hay, and this is axiomatic to paskening halacha. Now, let me just go one step further, and we'll end off the shiur.
So this would mean, for example, that Salman Rosh, when he said you can stay in the carriage even after shkia, if you're ready
to
die.
Yeah, no, okay, but 1 second.
Could be maybe God.
One second.
Shatatrak. Stay on the bus.
With all due respect to the memory of David Hartman, yeah. You have to know that it's a frum person, that it's a rav, that it's yorei v'shalem. The Besamim Rosh had an axe to grind. I wouldn't depend upon a psak of David Hartman. They tell me in the Jerusalem Post, his daughter was interviewed, Tova, the founder of Shirah Hadashah, and she quotes David Hartman that it's a shame her father said that we have Sefer Vayikra. Did you see that interview? Is it quoted correctly to me? They quoted to me in shul. People jumped on me after davening. That's what she...
His son said he's embarrassed.
By
the things in the Chumash, like the halacha about killing a Molek. He's embarrassed by it.
Killing a Molek. That's what embarrasses him after the Holocaust. I was once asked that on Israeli radio by a Reform rabbi, and I said, that's what embarrasses you? I don't have a problem with that after the Holocaust. But the truth is, I wouldn't paskin that way. There's a whole sheet of the Ramban, and if you're allowed to make peace with them. I took a sheet of the Chuyah and turned it around. Oh, he didn't know that. But I said, but you should know. I really don't have any questions after the Holocaust. If I met a Malek, Habola Hagecha, Hashkein Bahargo. So you see, David Hartman learned in Lakewood, learned in Chaim Berlin. In his old age, he came to YU. The enmity evidently was already within him. I want to tell you that I have on tape Gaffney, that maneuver Winiaz, saying exactly the same thing, that it's criminal that after Bereshit with Shmo, we come to Vayikra. You understand? So now you're going to tell me that Duvi Hartman Paskin, Wadi Paskin, that's not serious. You're talking about the Besamim Rosh, Zolomim Meichel Zayn, but he had a halavai, he could have been my student in a YU atmosphere. The Besamim Rosh might have gone on to become a Chad Megadolei Yisrael.
Well, whoever it was that gave him soccer, the girls on the bus go to Lakewood even after Shkia.
Not the girls, it was the boys. The girls went, contacted a Chabad rabbi, and they were all placed, they got off the highway. Look, I threw it out, but I'm very angry at a different concept. How do you leave Erev Shabbos when snow is falling? You know it's impossible to get to Lakewood. Mendav Sain and Erev Shabbos Yid, okay? I try never to travel a big distance on Friday. When I'm invited to be scholar in residence, I have to go to Baltimore from New York. Tonight, called them Lamasa. I'm coming on Thursday. You have to put me up an extra day. But I can't take the tension of, God have mercy, what can happen? The Mokum Sakana, Satan Makatrade, what can happen to you while you're traveling? And you all know, whenever the electricity breaks down in your house, it's Erev Shabbos. That much I can tell you from experience. When something goes wrong, it's always Erev Shabbos. All right. Okay. I just want to show...
Murphy's an anti-Semite.
No, it's the reality. Satan Makatrade. Okay. Now, Rabbi Avadji Yosef has a very interesting Kuntres Psak that we quoted before, and he totally agrees with the Shach. And it's the Yaakov Yosef, page 208, and it's Sifkatan Yud Dalet. Watch. Kishimaron kotev svarerachat lahakhel bestam viachakach kotev viyeshom rim lahachmir halacha kestam lahakhel. In other words, what he says first, even if it's mekel, you don't have to be machmir. But Rav Avadji adds one other concept. Umihu bidini mamonot? Hamuchzat yachol lomar kimli kisvara hayesh omrim neged hastam. You see, in dini mamonot, I'm holding the money. I have $100 in my hand. Ephraim says I owe him $50. What's the klal? Hamotzi mechavero olav haraya. Okay? So, Ephraim will bring me one viewpoint from the Shulchan Aruch. What he said, stam, the halakha is like that. And I'll say to Ephraim, prove to me that the second viewpoint is not correct. You can't prove it. If you can't prove it, you can't take my money. You see, Rav Avadji? He adds on one little addendum. What the Shach says is beautiful when it comes to Issa v'Heter. Halacha is like stam. This is the halacha. Look into Shulchan Aruch tonight. You'll see what I'm saying. Then yesh omrim. All right, it's a chumra. Sometimes it may be a kula. Maybe there's certain circumstances where the rav will want to paskin that way, where there are other factors involved. But when it comes to money, yes, the halacha is like the stam. But the magzik, I'm holding the money. I say, well, prove to me that the second opinion is wrong. You can't prove it. Hamotzi mechavero, olav haraya. That is Rav Avadji.
Boys, maybe it's more than just a question of money. In this, it has to do with me personally. When it deals with money, you're dealing with hurting another human being. Therefore, he's more stringent.
Yeah, but I have to tell you, and if I really owe him the money, then I'm hurting him. You're trying to say he's... You're talking like a... You're talking already Ruach HaKodesh, and this is a Lufisha class.
That if a person is a gadol, the Eibishter has his own custom. And somehow...
You know that from the Torah, if you killed on purpose, and one guy killed accidentally, it winds up one guy's on the ladder, and I've lived long enough already that I've seen some of the problems that Eiv raises solved before my eyes, unfortunately. Gentlemen, to reiterate, we're opening up a fascinating world, but you'll see where this leads to. It's the heart of halacha, the heart of psak. Well, you have to go shlav shlav. It's a big, we're going to deal with the shach. There's a very important ramah. And then we move sideways. Now, to reiterate, I'm going to get involved with a philosophic question. It's very exciting, Shayurim. Not all of this can you use publicly. You have to be a Talmud Chacham, you know, to appreciate. But a lot of it can be simplified. And as the Rav used to say, you can give public lectures to congregants and they'll have a new appreciation of halacha. It's not the stam, hit and miss. There's deep thought behind it. So what did we do today? We reviewed last week's share, now reviewing this week's share, and we built upon last week with that radish. It's amazing how many times that radish will show up in halachic literature. Are white and black radishes different? Absolutely. The how they handled the Pesach of the Shulchan Aruch, fascinating. I've yet to see a black radish in the state of Israel, but maybe they were at that time. It is all possible. The Netziv and the Aruch HaShulchan, their son and nephew's attitude towards them, it's not attitude, it's simply he didn't know his own father that well, because during his formative years, he ate at the table of the Netziv. He was a Ben Bayit. He was the nephew of the Netziv. He didn't know his father that well. He knew the Netziv very well. But it's fascinating, even on this topic, he doesn't quote the Aruch HaShulchan. Elyak's work in Reb Chaim Volozhin, wow, how he struggles. You got to read it to appreciate what I'm saying, how he struggles. Reb Chaim said, you don't have to paskin like the Shulchan Aruch. Don't tell anyone. Keep it a secret. No, explain it. Don't be afraid. But he's right. I'm wrong. I'm dealing with the elite. I'm a Litvak. He's dealing with the masses. And that takes us into the interesting question about Selah HaRav and Ein HaChinam. I don't want to confuse a base Yaakov girl. But someone who knows how to learn, Adarabba V'Adarabba. Think what your Rebbe Paskin, think what he said, work it out. You may agree, you may disagree. If you can prove your case, stand on it. Then we introduced the Kuntres HaShach. We dealt with one little issue. Stam, anonymously, Ben Yeshomrim Yeshomrim, and the addendum of Rav Ovadia, very powerful, the difference between Mammon to Issa V'Chetta. And we'll see more on that topic. Now, Yitzchak, everything in here is for you. I have a lot, gentlemen. If anyone did not get Torah to go, everyone praised this issue, you're welcome to it. They have a whole pile downstairs. I brought some upstairs. Not only that, anyone interested, they want to do research on Rav Henkin and why the world doesn't know about him. If you're interested,
yes,
for you. This is fascinating. The Haredi world has a terrible problem here. They came out with pictures of Rabbanim in Europe, and no one is wearing a black hat. Either they have no hat, or they're wearing a hat like this. And you should see the attempt to justify why they wear a hat like Rav Kefet. If anyone wants it, this is Rav Heschel Schechter in defense of his remark that played all over the world. Nebuch, they jumped on him with the Schwarzer remark. Here's a defense of him. And
is
very,
it English?
Yeah. Very interesting comments. Here are two DVDs of Israeli preachers, Darshanim. If you know Sephardic Hebrew, enjoy it. And this is Rabbi Pinto. I think this is the rabbi who's under investigation. I can't believe what they publish here. The cover to the Tiferet, until we meet again tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, I would miss the shir for all the matzah that is now has turned into stale bread. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vidanya. The banana is healthy. Okay, anyone want this? It's yours. I don't know. I find all this so fascinating.